Okay, thank you, Joanna, and I thank the members for this really good discussion about timeliness, which was reassuring. I especially liked the conclusion, quality trumps timeliness. Nevertheless, I think we are taking it very seriously at this moment. I think we do a lot more on getting the time management straight. And I also like the comment, keep your promise. And if you are not able to keep it, explain it clearly. And I think we're really trying to do that in a better way. I also like the suggestion to do outreach in an earlier stage to make sure that you're not on the wrong track. We did that with insurance. We started more than 20 years ago, and we succeeded in bringing a standard that made everybody exceedingly happy, including the industry. So it's really something that we need to keep on doing. As you said, Joanna, in your introductory words, we produced some documents, important documents, in the last couple of months. First of all, the conceptual framework. We've talked about that at length. I think it's an important document, gives clarity on a lot of issues, including the issue of prudence, a very sensitive issue. Having read the Financial Times over the last couple of weeks, I'm not so sure that everybody has read the conceptual framework very thoroughly, but I do think we brought more clarity on this issue. I think the most important added value of the conceptual framework is that we have developed high-level guidance on measurement. Measurement is one of the most difficult issues in accounting, and I really think we made progress there, and also we have better definitions of assets and liabilities, and that is also important. Then we issued a discussion paper on financial instruments with characteristics of equity. I cannot promise it is easy reading, but it is very important. It's all about what is the difference between liabilities and equity, what's the difference between what you own and what you owe. And it should be easy, but in practice, there's a lot of financial innovation to combine the advantages of equity with the advantages of liabilities, for example, the deductibility of interest payments. And that makes this question exceedingly difficult. We have an existing standard, IAS 32, which has actually functioned well during the financial crisis. So we do not foresee a major overhaul. However, the standard is very rules-based, has implicit principles, but they have not been made explicit. And that's what we're trying to do to also meet the challenges of ever increasing financial innovation. And I think the DP provides a clear rationale for the difference between equity and liabilities. And it also has good proposals to improve the presentation and disclosures around these issues. So I all wish you a lot of happy reading. Then our new home. This is really simple. We have a couple of weeks ago we moved to Canary Wharf. In itself, for some of our staff members, it's a big increase in the travel time, so that every change is of course difficult. But it is really nice. It is spacious. It's modern. We have well-functioning air conditioning. The toilets look presentable, and especially the better air quality, I'm sure that will lead to even higher quality standards.
But what I have to say is that all the meeting rooms are named after rivers, and there is a New Zealand river, and there isn't an Australian
river. Which is the...
Waikato.
Oh, of course, yes. That's a Maori, I suppose, yeah. Anyway, it's a big improvement. I all encourage you to come. I think in the future we will try to have a meeting close to the office, right, April? Or
That's from September of next
September.
Year. March will still be here.
So I hope you will then take the opportunity to come and take a look. We have also a very presentable boardroom where more people can sit, and you don't have to tread on people's toes when you go to the board table. So all in all, our staff did a fantastic job in getting this done. Then a little bit about implementation support. We've been talking about that indirectly today. Most of you are probably not aware that currently 30% of our technical staff are working on implementation support, so roughly a third of our staff. We devote a lot of resources to this. For example, on the implementation of IFRS 17, we have already organized two TRG meetings, and there will be a third one in September with 49 submissions. And of course, we have still have a big insurance team in place to work on all these issues. We have also produced many support materials, a short guide on reinsurance contracts, and more than 10 web presentations on technical details of the standard, and they are really being watched. These web presentations have had more than 65,000 views. And this is not something that you just get to by surfing through the net. I mean, you really have to be interested to watch that. Then, of course, the maintenance of the existing standards through the Interpretations Committee, extremely important work. Every year, more than 20 issues are discussed. We never let anything sit. All the issues that have been presented to us have been treated. And next week there will be a committee meeting, and we will be talking about cryptocurrencies. No standard setting, but perhaps giving some pointers to people how to treat them. Having read The Economist this week, which had a very good and skeptical article about cryptocurrencies, I'm not sure that we will ever do a standard setting on this topic. Interestingly, The Economist was not only skeptical about cryptocurrencies themselves, but also about the blockchain technology. I recommend your reading it. Other issues are cloud computing and exchange rates in Venezuela. Speaks for themselves. a huge problem for preparers in practice. Just a few words on better communication in financial reporting. I have explained that a couple of times with you. We are almost, I think the finish line of primary financial statements is getting in sight. I'm a bit careful. Still some tough issues to discuss. Very important work, which will lead to more structure and order in the, especially in the income statement, for example, by creating more subtotals, and which we believe that is very important. Just one word on management commentary. We have, in the previous advisory council, discussed that we had decided to go ahead with it, and at the end of this month, we will have our first meeting with a consultative group, a very good group of people, more than 20 people from around the world with lots of interesting perspectives on management commentary. And I'm going to chair that myself. I'm really looking forward to this work stream. I believe it is very important. As I've explained to you before, it will remain within our remit of financial reporting. But we do know that a lot of elements that are very important for the long-term value of a company and ultimate cash flows to investors, that they escape in the short run the financial statements because they are simply not recognized. And it is very important that investors get proper communication about it. And we really think we can help preparers do that. Then finally, an issue that we are truly struggling with, an old topic that has always led to a lot of controversy, goodwill. I gave a speech on that issue last week in Japan, led to a very good article in The Economist of this week by a journalist who understood the issues very well. That is a rare fact in accounting. And basically, this is a consequence of the post-implementation review of business combinations, and we have really been struggling with the issue of goodwill. One of the outcomes of the PIR was that impairment, the yearly impairment exercise, is at the same time costly and also expensive. It involves a lot of estimations, and it is an expensive exercise. And we did a lot of research to see. But first of all, the board did not have any inclination to start a discussion about possible amortization of goodwill. And we were especially looking at trying to make impairment more effective, but at less cost. And as the staff developed proposals, we came to the conclusion that it was next to impossible to develop proposals to make impairment more effective without also making it more costly. So we were trying to solve an impossible puzzle. And what the work of our staff also made very clear, and increasingly, I mean, that is something that has always been perceived by the ISB, but it made it more clear than ever before, which is that the impairment test is almost bound to be too little, too late. Because if you look at the impairment test, what you are trying to estimate is not just the goodwill of the acquisition, but also the existing unrecognized goodwill in the acquiring business. That is all involved in the impairment test, but it means that a company, before goodwill gets impaired, has to burn through all the existing goodwill in the acquiring company. And that has become much more clear to us than ever before. And that has led by some of us, not by all of us, but to some concerns that because impairment is bound to be too little too late, that there is too much goodwill building up on balance sheets. And what will happen to that in the next financial crisis, because there will be one at a certain point. Couldn't we just get an avalanche of impairments at that point? And will then everybody be pointing at the ISB, where were you? So we feel we do need to open this discussion again. Also to look at the possibility of reintroducing amortization as a sort of simplified impairment. But I think it's fair to say that the outcome of this is completely unclear at this point, because there are also huge disadvantages to amortization. The fact that it is impossible to determine in an objective way in what time period it should take place, and also the knowledge that a lot of investors will simply disregard it completely and will make their own analysis, and then we would be promoting non-GAAP, while the goal of our primary financial statements work is to close the gap between non-GAAP and GAAP. So huge problems, but if at least the outcome of these discussions could be that there is a more awareness of the problem, that it will also in the investor community, and perhaps we can also find ways to improve disclosures around acquisitions and better presentation of goodwill. I discovered during this process that there are companies who don't even mention goodwill on their balance sheet, that submerge everything under intangibles. And so for a lot of investors, I think, we always think about the sophisticated investors, but there are a lot of investors who still take book value at face value and don't look through the numbers. And that's what I'm really worried about. So I think we really have to try to tackle this this issue. Outcome unsure, but we felt that we couldn't leave it alone. So, well, these are my introductory words. I will be happy to take any questions. I'm sure there are questions about the last issue.
So are there questions, comments of Hans? Is that someone? Oh, it's a phone.
Itataki.
Itataki.
Thanks, Joanne. Well, just one simple comment, but I think that the reintroduction of a goodwill amortization will be the very nice thing from the especially management point of view. So there are lots of pros and cons, but I hope the good discussion will be done on the board. Thank you.
In Japan, there is a huge this is one of the big issues in Japan. It's also one of the two carve-outs in carve-ins in the Japan Modified International Standards, who nobody uses, but still they're there. there's a lot of interest in Japan, and I think it's fair to say that the majority of the preparer community in Japan supports the reintroduction of amortization. But in the last week, I've already had two visits from preparers who were very worried about their income statement. So this is not going to be an easy ride.
Any other comments?
Lothar.
Put this onto the topic for the September Advisory Council meeting, because I think that would be very good to discuss the issue of goodwill amortization now. That's my proposal, and not to go more into detail right now.
Any other comments or questions? So is there anything else on the technical agenda from you, Neely? Comments from you?
Yeah, thanks, Joanna. I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive on some of the comments that Hans made and highlight a few things from Agenda Paper 5A that April had kindly prepared for all of you about a month ago. April, do you have control over the slides? Thank you. Oh, even better. Okay. Okay. So first, just to highlight for your own planning purposes, where are we in terms of progress on the ISB work plan? As Hans already mentioned, one of the big issuances this year since our last meeting was the conceptual framework in March. We also issued some narrow scope amendments on IS-19 in February. Later this year, we do expect to issue two more narrow scope amendments. One is on the definition of a business, and the other is on the definition of material. I will tell you, in an effort to communicate and not raise expectations, there is a chance that definition of a business might actually slip into early October. So want to keep our promises, but there's just, with holidays and other competing priorities, it just might slip a few weeks there. In terms of consultative documents, we issued an exposure draft on accounting policy changes in March. The comment period for that ended in July, and the staff expects to bring a paper to the board probably in November to discuss the feedback that we've received. And then, as Hans already mentioned, the FICE discussion paper was issued in June. Very much interested in hearing feedback on that, and common period will end in early January. What the staff has been quite busy with, and what the board has also been very engaged in, is trying to simplify and explain this very long, very complicated topic in webcasts and educational materials and outreach, just to facilitate some of the comments and keep people engaged in the topic. So this is sort of building on some of the comments that we heard in the previous breakout session on comment letters and how to keep people engaged. We are working to try to simplify the topic to get more involvement there. And then finally, we expect to issue a proposed update in Q3 on the IFRS taxonomy. And this relates to IFRS 13. No new standard has been issued, but there have been some common practice elements that the staff has identified, and through working with the board, that there's a proposal to provide some additional labels within the taxonomy to provide that comparability and structure for those commonly used labels. A couple of other highlights. We talked about this morning, but primary financial statements. In September, the staff is planning to bring a paper to the board discussing the movement of the primary financial statement project from the research agenda to the standard setting agenda. So this is exactly what we were talking about this morning, that paragraph 5.6 in the due process handbook. The paper that we've included in your pack lays out the analysis, but the staff has identified what they believe to be a pervasive problem with primary financial statements in terms of lack of structure, which would then lead to lack of comparability, and that it's widespread and that there are solutions out there that could, in a reasonable manner, address these problems. So we would be interested in any comments or advice that you might have about moving this particular project from the research agenda to the standard setting agenda. And as Sue mentioned this morning, one of the consequences is simply that on the standard setting agenda, the next consultative document could either be a discussion paper or an exposure draft. However, on the research within the research program, the next consultative document would only be a discussion paper. It wouldn't open up the possibility of the next document being an exposure draft. In addition to what it would say is that we're continuing to devote more resources to the project, and arguably that there's additional prominence to the project because it's now on the standard setting agenda. The second bullet point is IBOR. In June, the board added a project on IBOR reform and effects on financial reporting to its research agenda. So this is related to the issue of the possible discontinuation of interest rate benchmarks, so things like Euribor and LIBOR, and what effect is that going to have on financial reporting. On the research agenda, we expect to spend the next 3 to 6 months monitoring what the developments are, doing outreach, analyzing what the possible consequences are to financial reporting, and then reporting back to the board. I would expect that to take place in early 2019, although realistically, just due to the uncertainty in market developments and what might happen in this space, there's very much the possibility of the need to continually monitor even after we do our initial research in this area. And then finally, commodities and cryptocurrencies. Hans had already touched on this, but the staff had done some additional outreach and presented a paper to the board in the July meeting. And one of the results of that was a board decision to take the cryptocurrency issue to IFRIC to see how the existing IFRS standards could be applied to cryptocurrency transactions, both for holding cryptocurrencies as well as for ICOs. Do you want to pause there to see if there's any questions on the primary financial statements, or we could wait till the very end?
Well, on that slide, and Gavin's put up his to speak, and I'm not sure which one of those it is. Gavin.
Well, you're lucky, Joanna, because it's both. So first of all, on your IBOR project, that timeline you've outlined will or run significant risk of simply being too slow. So companies will be facing, even this year end, challenges maintaining existing accounting with some of the changes that are coming down the track with the benchmark rates. So we talked about timeliness earlier on. Here's a very good example of a rapidly emerging issue, and the timeline you've just outlined will not allow the ISB to be responsive in the standard setting perspective or context if that's what the ISB decides is appropriate. So that would be comment number one. Comment number two is a question stroke comment on your primary financial statements. It seems to me strange that you're thinking about moving this project on the standard setting agenda, and yet you're not yet clear whether or not the next item could be either an exposure draft or a discussion paper. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are very good reasons. I know you meet the five criterion. However, from an external perspective, I think you'd be advised or better placed actually to have a firmer view about what the next step would be from a standard setting process viewpoint before you actually end up taking an agenda decision like this.
So with that, are there any other comments on either of those? And I know that the first one was actually discussed in one of the groups around, and absolutely about dealing with emerging issues on a timely basis. But in terms of the primary statements and moving that as outlined in the paper from a research topic to a standard setting topic, any comments on that, either agreeing or disagreeing with the comment that Gavin has made about make up your mind first as to what it is? Lothar.
Sorry, it's actually not on that. just a very quick question on cryptocurrencies. Did I get this right? You're not concerned about holding cryptocurrencies. Your issue is the ICOs.
No, we're covering the IFRIC meeting next week. We'll be covering both. The question is for both holding cryptocurrencies as well as ICOs.
Uh-huh. I thought the first issue may be maybe not controversial, but okay.
Yeah.
Roxana.
Very quickly on the primary financial statement, strong support from our side because we saw there is a significant number of APMs which are moving now into the financial statement, so we think it's really the time that this is taken on board by the ISB to fix the issue.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, move on. Neely?
Okay. Very quick update on the research pipeline. You've seen the slide from our February meeting. We will have another update to the board on the progress on the research pipeline, but we expect that the extractive activities project and pension benefits that depend on asset returns will become active in September. The remaining projects on the left-hand side of the screen will become active by the end of the year, with the intention for the projects on the right-hand side of, or the pipeline projects on the right-hand side to become active sometime in 2019 or 2020. So the big change there is that the board had provided us with prioritizations in February, and now we're moving on that and making some of these projects active. I wanted to also update you on the technology initiative. This is something that we've spoken about a number of times. We had a big discussion back in October of last year, and then we provided a brief update in February at the last meeting. A couple of things that have focused on and made this particularly important. One is that we are moving forward in working through and thinking about the recommendations that you provided in October. And then also we have our Principles of Disclosure project, where some of the feedback that we heard on the discussion paper was the need to consider technology and the effect of technology within our standard settings. So with Principles of Disclosure, the intention is to focus primarily on disclosures that are technology neutral, so not thinking about things on a paper-based environment or a technology-based environment, but the technology question more generally is being handled through a technology initiative because we believe that it's more pervasive of an issue than just the Principles of Disclosure project. And to give you a little bit of a flavor for that, you've already seen the slide. It's in the pack for the taxonomy project that we'll be talking about, or the taxonomy presentation that we'll be talking about tomorrow. But the way we're looking at the technology initiative, first and foremost, is scoping what exactly are the technological developments that are going to have an impact on us, IFRS Foundation, ISB, standard setting process, and financial reporting. Preliminarily, and this is going to evolve as we learn more, but preliminarily we think that the scope can be broken out into four main work streams. First is accounting, which is things like accounting for crypto assets. The second is consumption of financial reports, and this will be one area of focus, or the primary area of focus tomorrow when we talk about the taxonomy. But this is really covering things like how do users use financial information, how is there the method of consuming financial information changing, and what does that mean for us as a standard setter? If we're using more artificial intelligence, does that drive us towards a need for more structure? What does that mean? Is it that the taxonomy is the answer, or would it be something else? And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. The third work stream that we anticipate relates to the standard setting process, and we've had some flavors of that today in terms of the comment letter process and how we analyze comment letters. Is there a way that we can use technology to make that more efficient and more effective? In addition, are there ways that we can use technology to get more evidence to support standard setting, as well as thinking about how we write standards and the impact of technology in doing so? And then finally, stakeholder engagement. We've also covered some of that today in terms of using alternative means to engage with our stakeholders. So if we want to engage earlier in the process, perhaps instead of comment letters, we can use roundtables. But maybe the roundtables don't need to be in person. Perhaps we could do that through video conferences. Same thing as we talked about in February. Perhaps stakeholder engagement or conferences could be done online through webcasts as opposed to in person, which is typically what the tendency is right now. So these are all the different areas that we're focusing on. And as you can tell, it's quite pervasive to everything that we do. And we'll continue to report back on how we progress with that. And then finally, I wanted to give you a quick update on the reputation survey. In February, we talked a little bit about the action plan that we have to address the two main issues, stakeholder engagement and timeliness, which today is one of the outputs in that we sought your advice, are seeking your advice on a number of issues related to timeliness and stakeholder engagement. The one thing I wanted to flag here just explain a little bit about what that means for us today within the organization, vis-a-vis the first point on achievement of target dates. I heard some comments in the last panel about communication and keeping our promises. So I just wanted to share a little bit of positive news in that we've been working very hard to do exactly that, to keep our promises. So things like conceptual framework, we had anticipated that we would issue at the end of March, which we hit. Same thing with the FICE discussion paper. We had planned to issue that at the end of June, and we had also hit that target. So we are working very hard to do so. It's been a concerted effort, as Andrea and Michelle had talked about this morning, in terms of more rigorous project planning, also more focus on prioritizations by the staff, and just thinking through and doing a better job of figuring out how long things are going to take. Having said that, though, and many of you have acknowledged this, thankfully, that standard setting is an uncertain process. There are variables that you can't anticipate, and I think particularly because so many of our projects are in the research phase, there's a little bit more of the, I'll call it exploratory surgery, where you might think you know what the timing is, and then you realize as you learn more that you have to do additional work and it shifts. And I think the best example of that is Goodwill. I think if you went back to January and looked at our website, we were anticipating issuing a consultative document by the end of this year. Now you'll see that there isn't a date on the website for the very reasons that Hans has talked about. So we've learned a lot, but we have more to do. So in the interest of communication, I wanted to share that with you, and I'll continue sharing that in future meetings if you find that helpful. And with that, I'll turn things over to Alan. Yeah.
I think that's right. Who has the clicker? I'm not sure I know how it works. Just a couple of minutes on what the trustees have been up to in recent months. Very important. Michelle Prada has been our chair for 7 years, or going on 7 years now. He agreed to stay on for an extra year while we finished our search for his successor. That has now been successfully done, blessed by the monitoring board, and Erkki Laikkanen will be with us and take over effective at our board meeting in mid-October in Johannesburg. So I'm guessing that at some point you, in the not-too-distant future, you will all become acquainted with Mr. Laikkanen, who is a very impressive gentleman. Did we have something on schedule? We did have something on schedule. Trustee meetings, we met in London in June, right here, same room, same building, not same room. Next meeting is in mid-October in Johannesburg. Preparations for that are well underway. I expect we'll be seeing an agenda in the next week or so, a couple of weeks. So that's obviously the next time we will all get together, and the due process conversation that we've had today and that will continue tomorrow will certainly be reported on to the rest of the Due Process Oversight Committee. Michelle, who is here today with me, is on the Due Process Oversight Committee, but it will be reported to the rest of us and then to the full board as part of that meeting as well. In terms of governance issues, other issues that are going on with the trustees, there's only one formal thing going on, I think, at the moment. There is a proposed constitutional amendment. The trustees approved the proposal, which will lengthen the terms or the maximum terms of the chair and the vice chairs of the Board of Trustees. The headline, and I think the only thing worth mentioning, is that it will increase the maximum term of the chair from 6 years to 9 years. That amendment, as I say, the proposal was approved. It's out for comment. Comment period ends in September. It will be submitted to the trustees for finalization and final approval at the meeting in Johannesburg in October. We are, as I think you can tell, working hard on the due process handbook. You saw the timeline earlier today, so I'm not going to repeat it, but the hoped-for end date is early 2020. A couple of other things I would mention. One is that we did meet with the monitoring board in June, we do that on an annual basis, and so I guess next summer we'll have another meeting with the monitoring board. The monitoring board itself is meeting in October in Spain. I think at the same time the Board of Trustees is meeting again, but so meeting in different places. The last thing I thought I'd leave you with is in terms of the focus of the Board of Trustees is determined to a very large extent by the work program of the staff and of the IASB. That focus through last year was a 10-plus year sprint of standard setting. Foundation Board is not involved in setting standards, as I said earlier, but the way we think strategically is inevitably affected by that. We're entering a period now where, as Hans said, a very significant portion of our resources is being spent on implementation, consistent application, education, and Neely's last slide actually mentioned post-implementation reviews, which will begin later this, the planning for those will begin later this year. The Board of Trustees' focus is going to change as that work comes more into view and as standard setting goes more into the rear view mirror. And so that's a little bit of a headline looking forward as to what I'm expecting and what I think the trustees will be expecting. Lee, it's yours. And I guess questions or comments or?
Any questions or comments? And Neely nicely handed it over to Alan without being prepared to accept any questions herself. So let's start with any questions of Alan or Lee in relation to the trustees? Nope. Okay, what about for Lee? Have you got comments you want to make?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's all right.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I messed that one up. Done for it?
Not at all. In fact, it'll be fairly brief, Chair. It's the benefit of always being the final speaker in a group of four. Most of the ground gets covered pretty well. Just a few things from my perspective, as you're aware, that I joined the organisation in April of this year. It's an absolute privilege to serve in this role. Where has my time been spent so far, which is a couple of questions I've already had today, obviously around the premises move, and so we will have a modest opening of the office later this month, an official opening. But the main piece there will be what Hans alluded to earlier, recognition of our people who really performed above and beyond their normal roles, if I could say it that way, to deliver a fantastic outcome for us. So we will celebrate and recognise our people in the appropriate way. The other one has been obviously what Alan alluded to with our new incoming chair. That process did consume a fair amount of time, but with a fantastic outcome as well. We haven't had a lot of opportunity as yet to engage with our new chair. We have had some. And my sense is that once we're through the October meeting, which will be the last chaired by Michelle, then we'll have an opportunity to consider where our chair is looking and really a fresh set of eyes, as all organisations do at different points. So I think we've alluded to, but I'll be a bit clearer, that it's important that we do get our new chair to engage with the advisory council as quickly as we can. So we're shaping diaries right at this time to make sure that we can do that for you. The other areas, I've had a couple of questions today as well around Brexit. Certainly we're engaging and trying to understand all of the implications as it is for the foundation as well. So obviously that's an important piece for us and our wellbeing. The final piece I thought I would share would be just a couple of very small observations, but important ones coming into this role. The first would be, and you know, my background has been as all of my adult working life as an accountant. So, you know, I pride myself on what I believe was my good knowledge and understanding of the standards and their applications, etc., over quite a few decades. But until you, and this was in Cannon Street, but we can call it Cannon Street / Canary Wharf, until you open the doors and really come in, you still don't have a great sense around the breadth of what the organisation actually does. And so for me, that was a point of pause. And for quite some time, the revelations and the success of what the organisation has been able to achieve over many years is just outstanding. A lot of that you can feel from the passion of the teams, of the staff that carry the roles that they do. We spoke earlier today in our breakout sessions, and we'll hear a little bit more about this tomorrow, about sense of purpose. Well, I can be really clear, the sense of purpose and the focus around serving and obviously around public interest is there in spades. And again, that carries a lot of when times are tough, when you're asking people to do much more than what you might normally expect them to do, they've been great at doing that. Not that we always want this to do that, but at times when circumstances require it, you can feel that passion greatly. The other piece, just my final one, would be just reflections around the inclusiveness of what the workforce is. Just to remind you, you know, we're in my words, a fairly modest-sized organisation, about 150. But, you know, we had 34 cultures represented in that 150. Many elements of our spread of skills and experiences is quite broad. Sure, there's areas we can improve, and we might touch on that again tomorrow. But the inclusiveness of the teams combined with their passion really sets the foundation, obviously, in what it's been able to achieve, and the board, I should say, but certainly sets us up well for the future. So I might pass back to you, Joanna.
Thank you very much, Lee. Very interesting to hear your perceptions from a short period here. Always good to hear upfront comments. Alan.
Yeah, Lee's remarks caused me to make one more observation about the foundation board. I'm now in my fourth year on the first year of my second term on the Foundation Board. One of the things that there's been an ongoing effort to do, and this is true of, I think, boards that try to function better generally, and that is we are trying to spend more effort and time on the strategic priorities of the foundation and related items, and less of our time on sort of housekeeping. And I wanted to mention that one of the things that Lee has been with us for only a few months now, but he is in the process of putting in an infrastructure and some increased communication that I think allows us to function better between meetings, get some of that underbrush out of the way, and I think it's a common objective that we have a more focused strategic emphasis on our work. So that is something else that's going on at the trustees level that is, I think, worthy of some note. And thank you, Lee, for helping.
Any questions or comments for any of the team of four that have spoken to us? No? In which case, what we might do is move on to our final session of the day.